Hello and welcome to the Twickenham CC podcast. My name's Dan Huff. I am secretary of the club. Very pleased to be moving into what is our fourth campaign of podcasts, which is something I'm not sure we thought we'd be doing when we kicked this off all those years ago. With me through thick and thin all the way there has been our club chairman, Eugene Berger. Eugene, how are you?
Hi, Dan. How are you? Welcome to 2022. Happy New Year to all of our listeners.
Absolutely. I remember you telling me you love this time of year, Eugene, because there's cricket from all corners of the globe, right?
Everywhere. You name it. There is Test cricket. There is Big Bash. There is... If you look hard enough, you will find cricket at every time of the day. I've been one of those that have been up until...
And you've been looking, haven't you? Let's be clear about this. You have been looking.
Most definitely. Yeah, you move from the Ashes to the South African Test to the BBL. You need more screens, man. You know, I'm gonna need some more TVs in my room, of which Cake will not approve of.
Magnificent stuff. Also with us today, Andy Donnellan. How are you, Donners? You good?
Yeah, all good, thank you. Happy New Year to everybody.
Fulham not been playing much football of late, Donners, have they? You've been coveted up?
Absolutely not. Never
do.
No, I don't think. I think we've had three or four games postponed. So we're gradually sliding back into the pack.
Yeah, see, Blackburn are coming up on your heels, but simply because they're playing a bit, right?
Well, they've just gone ahead of us, actually. So, yes, we're down to third. But we've got all these games in hand. I'd rather have points on the board, but it is what it is, so...
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And to square the circle, talking about Fulham here, we better talk about Brentford pretty quickly, given the allegiances in this cricket club. We thought we'd bring an employee in, and not John Varney, he's otherwise engaged, so we've gone for absolutely the next best to that, and that is Steve Watts, full-time employee at Brentford, of course, and Twickenham CC legend. Wattsy, how are you? Good?
I'm good, Dan. They tried to kill me off in season three of the podcast, but... turns out that I was just buried somewhere and got resuscitated, and here I am, ready for season four.
So, well, it was the wider world that tried to kill you off, wasn't it? You've been a bit under the weather, Gov, in all seriousness, right?
Yeah, it's been a mixed year. Yeah, which is a shame. Stopped me in my prime, obviously, averaging over 50 for the club. But, you know, luckily Brentford have been there
take
to see
long,
me through.
There we didn't go. Take long, eh? Straight you out how long it before
you know, what, you know what, though, Wattsy? That's last season, just for the record. That's last season. We're in a new season now.
Great. I'll bank it.
Do it, mate. And the Bees, you are. I forgot there. Your title at the Bees is what exactly? So I was going to get it wrong. So I didn't say anything.
Marketing director.
Marketing director. And you've been there what 18 months now, sir?
About 16 months. Yeah. Literally joined.
Quite one... dull life, I guess. Is it?
Very dull. Yeah, not a lot happening. joined one game into last season, which we lost. Luckily, managed to come in, put an arm around Thomas. You know, gave him a few bit of tactical advice. And ever since then, it's been on the up and up.
He carried on.
You know, we'll
excellent
take that
stuff. And of course, the Bees won yesterday, didn't they? Good performance against Villa.
It was a great result, and there were some good moments.
Yes, fair comment. Yeah, when I said good performance, I did almost check myself. But
yeah, it was fantastic. I was there with the family, and it was the first time my little girl had seen us win, and she went positively mental, which means we have a proper football fan in the family, which is very good.
Marvellous. Well, I was at the New Meadow yesterday to watch Shrewsbury Town come out victorious against Sheffield Wednesday. Took my two boys, Stan and Vince, for their debut at home. So nice to have a semi-full house there. We were about 9,000 and we won. And of course, the reason I mention it is actually to do with a TCC club member, Sam Cliff, Sheffield Wednesday fan. And my stat of the week for you folks, if you can beat this one, right? Only once in our history... has Shrewsbury Town ever been beaten by Sheffield Wednesday? And we've played them something like 23 times. It is odd how sometimes, and you must see this with cricket, you can play certain clubs, you play at certain grounds, and it just seems to work. And I thought I'd mention that for Cliffy, that once again, we managed to put the hoodoo on Sheffield Wednesday. So not that I'm basking in glory, because it isn't much glory really, but particularly when Brentford have got to the Premier League. But I liked it. So
great,
it's my stat,
Dan. And I mean, you know, there are other teams that have that same voodoo. And you could say the same about England travelling to Australia. We could, you know, we could mention the Ashes.
All right, Hughes. All right. Well, we might as well start that. I was thinking about asking you what your hopes were for 2022, but we might as well start with, you know, being competitive in the test match would be a good one, right? Because since we've last had a pod, we've had two more tests. We've come second, quite convincingly. I'm not kipping around Hughes' house to watch the fifth as we as we go in to try and win the series, because that ain't happening. I was going to ask you, I mean, I suspect, you know, if you're coming off your long run, then you won't even have entered 2022 yet. You'll be that far back. But what have you made? Have you had much chance to see it, mate? Anyway, that's the first question.
I've mainly watched sort of extended highlights, really. To be honest, I could watch the whole thing and it would be an extended low light, wouldn't it, really? Because I think T20s go on longer than our innings anyway. It's been absolutely pitiful. And it has been pretty much the same as 4 years ago, hasn't it? It's just we haven't learned. We haven't done anything to address the issues that we had then. In fact, we've gone backwards. I saw some stat that I think the last 16 batting debutants all average under 30 or 31 for England, which is astonishing. There's obviously talent problems. There's style of sort of application problems in terms of the one day game. Obviously now, you know, everyone knows that the investment in that is where the ECB's gone, which means we don't have the right temperament and sometimes technique in our batsmen. But also we haven't addressed the issue with our spin. We haven't. But even on the coaching side, we haven't bowled put the ball in the right place. You know, it's just. I don't know how you prepare. It's like, imagine preparing for the Olympics for on a four-year cycle, and that's the best you can come up with as your plan to try and take on another team. It's absolutely astonishing. But yeah, it's...
But isn't the thing as well, we apparently have been planning for this series for 2 years, right?
Yeah.
What were we doing?
That's exactly what I mean. Like, that's why I brought up the Olympic analogy. You plan 4 years ahead. You know exactly where you want to be at every point. You know, you identify all the key metrics, all the key things you've got to do to compete. And we've just done none of them. I mean, it's a shambles. It's an absolute shambles.
There's only one person that's prepared, you know, and that's Joe Root.
Yeah, exactly. And now I hear people calling for his head, and everyone who's, all seven people who have listened to this show for a long period of time will know that he had my wrath at the start of his reign of captaincy. But now I hear people calling for his head and I'm like, you know, he's our one batting player who's good enough to be in the team, and he's done nothing wrong captaincy wise. He just doesn't have any support, you know. I just think, yeah, it's, I don't know where we come back from here. We all joke on the group about South African players playing for England. But I did start to think about if I could carve out a decent top six of the last 20 years for England who weren't born in South Africa. And it's not easy. Alistair Cook and Ian Bell.
Try and include only people who didn't go to private schools as well. See where you get to then.
I mean, it is astonishing. When you look at it, it is South African-born batsmen. You go through all of their wiki, it's mad. And, you know.
Okay, I'm going to just put something to you then, Watson. I get all that. Obviously, boy, do I get all that. And it's clearly been a bit of a nightmare. But just looking through England's results in 2021, you know, Wednesday, the 25th of August, 2021, England 432, India 78 and 278. England win by an innings and 76 runs against India.
Weird.
That's the end of August. No, of course, Headingley. But the narrative has not been these England players are not very good in Australia. It's these England players are shit. Now, I'm not sure I've ever bought into the they're shit thing, but there's something about the preparation for this particular series that's gone wrong. And now that it intrigues me that we can batter India. Admittedly, we didn't win every test by an innings and 76 runs last summer, but something's gone right there. So, and I just wonder what has changed so obviously. Is it the pitches? Is it the fact they played so much cricket between then and now? Is it something specific, or is it attitudinal? Is it about the way we approach the game, and is it about the mistakes that we've made in terms of the psychological side of all this, or is it all of it? I mean, I'm just trying to pull it apart a bit, because we've gone from being actually pretty competent to being beyond useless. No, and that seems like a big jump in a short period of time.
I think just jumping in there, Disco, I think it's a bit of everything. But saying that we were competent in the summer, we were, but we were at home. And I think, you know, English conditions are different from playing down under, are different from playing on the subcontinent. So arguably we have got the bowlers to take advantage of English conditions. So I think that's another point that we do need to consider. I mean, India haven't done especially well against South Africa in the first test. So maybe they're not as good as perhaps they were 2, 3, 4 years ago. But for me, I mean, we discussed this at length on the last pod. There's just so much wrong with English cricket at the moment. We've not had a chance going to Australia. We just haven't given the lads a chance. And for me, we need to have wholesale change on the admin side and how cricket is played in this country, how competitions are set out, how competitive it is. You know, you can take anybody. It feels like you can take almost anybody from Sheffield Shield in Australia and drop them in the test team and they're ready. You can't do that with county cricket.
At home,
arguably, yes. But again, that comes down to the fact that we're playing at home and we've got the conditions. But we just haven't had a chance.
Well, I think even with that 432 in August, I think the telltale signs are there, answering my own question in a way. Point one, Joe Root scored 100. And Joe Root hasn't scored 100 yet. So that's something. David Malan's looked okay so far. I think most people would agree with that. He got 70. And the two openers both scored some runs. They got 60-odd each. And I think Burns and Hamid, for all their sins, look like they might be openers at that level. Not that their stats this winter have been great, but I can see why they've been picked. So there is a bit of continuity there. It's just not been enough to put us into positions where we can win the game. So maybe we build on that four, but what do we do with the rest? I'm taking a big, deep breath here, Watsy. What do we do with Josh Butler?
You've got bigger problems than Josh Butler, I'm sure.
No, I think that's right. I think that's right, yeah.
You know, I think, look, if England were a top test team, would Josh be in the side? Probably not. But you've just said you're happy with those two openers. They averaged 10 and 11 on this tour so far.
Yeah, I said happy. I've got a plan B to get rid of them, I'll be honest, unless Josh Butler is it. But then again, we're going down the Jason Roy route here of trying to get somebody who's brilliant at white ball cricket.
They're not good enough. And Josh should be in this. If he's going to be in the side, yes, I would agree. He'd be better off in the side as at batting at six, where his average, by the way, is in the 40s. He bats at six. He averages much. He's much better when he bats up the order. And he has actually shown that he can stick around. He's much maligned, but he can stick around. He can play a different form of cricket. He does have the temperament. He's not the best gloveman in the world. He's a one-day gloveman. You know, you won't hear me arguing with that. But I just... He wouldn't be in a top-quality test size, top six, but he'd be in ours because the alternatives are abysmal. We desperately need... We need luck. We need to find another Joe Root. We need another couple of young guys like Harry Brook or, you know, a player, a couple of young players like that to come through and just get the hang of Test cricket right away. But I think most of us thought Ollie Pope would be that. You know, is that Crawley clearly, isn't it? You know, he's had one swallow in his summer, didn't he, basically? He got massive double 100 and we all thought he was incredible. If you take that out, I expect his average is about 7 or something. So... you know, we've tried a lot of these young players. I thought the changes in the third test were quite extraordinary, actually. They were literally, it was literally throwing shit at a wall. It was like, we've lost the first couple of games. We've got these inferior players, but we'll throw them in anyway, just in case it freshens things up. And yeah, you know, look, I could talk about it. It's thoroughly depressing. I don't
so,
really
so you,
see
what do we do next? Yeah, because... yes, next in terms of the fourth and the fifth test, because we have to get through that. But what do we do then when we get back to England? And I think that question is more important than you might sound, because we're going to get back to England, we're going to be playing in English conditions, and whatever we do, whoever plays, are going to look better than the people who are playing now. Now, it might be that these players suddenly look a bit better, or whoever we bring in suddenly looks like they might be a bit better, until we get to Australia again in 4 years when they don't look good again. So what are your thoughts on the short and the medium term here? Or is it, are you like Watsy, we're just in a massive hole and we have to sit this out and see what develops?
I think all three of you actually hit the nail on the head there in terms of preparation. You know, I remember, I think it was Sri Lanka that England toured in January and did really well against them. But again, Joe Root was the limelight there. In India, I think you guys did okay there in terms of the runs. I think anywhere where there's...
That's pretty big caveats. We did all right in India. They're not bad, you know. So these boys can
And this
play
is
them.
Where the preparation comes in. What I'm trying to get to is every country you've played in has not been a hard, fast, bouncy wicket. And the only reason that I think Root and Milan are standing out above the rest here is because they play with high hands. You know, you look at the way everyone else has gotten out, it's because they're still continuing to play with low hands on hard bouncy wickets compared to what you do in England or Sri Lanka. Or I can tell you now, when they go to West Indies in a couple of weeks' time or months' time, whenever they go, they're going to do well there too. Purely because the wickets have changed compared to when there was the Ambrose Walsh, you know, those fast, hard, bouncy wickets where games were called off because they were dangerous. I think they'll do well because of the nature of the wickets there. Now, what do you do? Do you prepare for one series where you go to Australia, or maybe you go to South Africa because they're going to have the same wickets? And I suspect with a South African lineup that we'll move on to a little bit later when we talk about the games that are going on against India, our lineup is looking, or the South African lineup's looking pretty damn good at the moment with those bowlers that are hard and fast and bouncy. So I think it's come down to that preparation. I don't think the guys have thought about how they're going to play. And more importantly, leave alone, Dan. You saw I've watched, you know, the three tests that I've watched. I watched the Australians leave balls go over middle stump because they trust the bounce. You can't do that in England, because what's going to happen if you leave it, it's obviously, it doesn't get as high. So that's why I think the preparation in terms of that that the English have had has just not been adequate enough. Now, you know, this comes down to...
So preparation, do we need 3-4-day games before we get into a test series? Is that the type of thing that you think we're missing? Now, admittedly, it did rain a bit before we got going in this test series, but we only had one game anyway.
I think it's the statisticians that need to work it out. It's the coaching staff that need to, the analysts that, you know, hang on, the ball's bouncing that much. This is what you need to do. This is how you need to play. This is how you need to prepare. That's my view on it anyway.
I see the angle. It's very NFL Watsy, that, doesn't it? You know, as in preparing your plays before you get out there.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, except you've got to have the players with the right technique and temperament and ability and confidence to be able to carry that out. Our guys look like they're feeling in the dark. They're rabbits in the headlights. Dan, I just want to pick you up on your comment that we scored runs in India. Okay, we did in the first innings.
Why did you say that? No, but we did okay competitively against India.
Okay. Because our totals after the first innings, which was good, were 178, 134, 164, 112, 81, 205 and 135. So this is
a challenging wicket.
Less challenging for India. But yeah, I'm just saying that this is a problem all year. And it is a bigger long-term problem. And there do have to be significant changes made. And just like 6 years ago, the refocus was put on white ball cricket, and it's easy to refocus on that because that's where all the moolah is, right? So, you know, if you're a kid growing up now, all you want to do is learn how to smash the ball. You do, because that's ultimately where you're going to be on TV in July, and ultimately that's where you're going to make some coin, and you're going to go over to the IPL and make proper sports star money. The only way that we're going to change our fortunes in Test cricket is to to restructure the summer. We need to do that. We've got an issue in terms of we're almost victims of the fact that we've had this age-old county system, and we're so beholden to the counties and the individual things. Where everyone can see from the 100, whether you loved it or hated it, if you had 8 teams, you're going to have much better standard of cricket and the best playing against the best. And iron sharpens iron, and we'd have a better, you know, and that should carry across to first class cricket, as well as one day cricket. And the other thing is the money that we get from the white ball game needs to be over invested into the red ball game. So we have far less, I would say, central contracted players, but there's a real carrot there for people that want to specialise in playing Test cricket and want to go to the top of that game. So that young people getting involved that might not be the type of people that are going to smash it over the boundaries instead can say, actually, I can make a name for myself by having good technique, by hanging around and playing more traditional cricket. And I think you have to put all those things together. It's a very hard mix and nobody succeeded yet. And the counties, it's all terrible to say, everyone loves our counties, but if you look at it from an England perspective, they do get in the way of creating the best system for us to have success now, nationwide.
I think there's so much there, Watson. I mean, I'll tell you a point about India. I mean, I can't remember the exact result of the series, but we definitely lost it. I mean, it wasn't particularly close, but I felt that we were a bit more competitive than we were now, and there were some quite odd wickets in that. But the point about the reorg, right, I get it, but there's two parts to that, and I'm not sure where we go with both of them. The first is, what would the reorg look like? Because the ECB is never going to allow red ball cricket to be played in the middle of the summer, or not to any significant amount. I mean, you look at it. I mean, I spoke to a few people from Middlesex who were spinners, and Ravi Patel's most obvious one from Harrison Marys, and he said, you know, no wonder people don't make progress, and I'm asked to bowl at the end of September and the beginning of May. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And he was pretty bitter about it, to be honest. And I get that, but I wonder how you're going to go with your, you know, with your 100 and your T20 and the other tournaments that are around. With our summer, we only got three or four months. How do we do that?
You mentioned a problem right away with the 100 and the T20. I mean, Barking mad, isn't it? You choose one format, and you go wholeheartedly into that. I think
perhaps choose the format that everybody else plays rather than create a brand new one that no one plays. That
ship sailed though, I think that will be our format. Maybe move T20 to, you know, to these ridiculous times of the year that the Red Bull game is put in. And maybe it is more about players specialising. We are pretty much, I can't think of another sport really around the world that there is two completely different codes of the same sport. Well, three, but two that are completely different games. T20 and Test cricket are completely different sports. And we try to, you know, because of how the game's evolved, we sort of say, well, it's all cricket. You can be good at all three. I think, you know, you might have two or three players that can play across both codes, but really you should be able to treat them separately and people can specialise in one or the other. I think that's the only way.
That's an open question. How do India deal with this? I mean, clearly T20 is massively significant in India and they don't have the 100. But they have players who do manage to be competitive in both arenas, don't they? I mean, I'm not an expert on all of this, I'll be honest. I mean, you know, I couldn't list you India's last T20 side, but at the same time, my feeling is that they've got five or six players. You know, Bumrah's a handful in all formats of the game.
This is the difference is bowling, right? So some bowling is a more transferable skill. It's different, definitely different. But, you know, if you're a quality spinner, you're going to be a handful on spinning tracks wherever you go. And a class fast bowler like Bumrah is going to be good wherever, you know, he's going to be a handful whatever track he bowls on. But we're talking about the elite of the elite. I'm talking about, you know, people playing in national tournaments and trying to work their way up to get to the bottom of that national. Those are the people we need to be looking at, because it's only when you get to the bottom of that level that you start improving into becoming one of the true elite players. And, you know,
Donald, what do you make of this? I mean, there's been talk, I mean, Kevin Peterson, for all his multiple sins, talking about, you know, restructuring English cricket and basically doing away with the counties. Now, he's got, the problem with that is the counties have got a veto on it, and turkeys don't normally vote for Christmas, right?
Yeah.
But are we getting to the stage where there is too much cricket that we have to fit in, therefore we have to fundamentally reorg, and would you do it, and how'd you do it?
Okay, in answer to your first question, is there too much cricket? I think the answer is yes. If it was me and I had a blank canvas, I get the whole idea of moving to franchise cricket, but I personally wouldn't do that. I would retain the counties. I think there's 18 counties, but I would split them into three divisions. You would have six teams in each division, and then there would be 10 first-class games in the season. So you'd play each team home and away. So there's your 10 first-class league 4-day cricket games. I would ditch one of the limited overs competitions, be it the 100, I get it, successful, or the T20. You've got to get rid of one of them for me. Concentrate on increasing the quality of four-day cricket. Play it during the summer. Have the one-day cricket at either end. I know that's not going to happen because that's just arguably that's too fundamental. That should have happened 10, 15 years ago.
One thing I would say is I don't see any point in having the 100 after all clubs have stopped coaching their juniors. You don't want 100 in August. No. Now, I get the logic was that kids aren't at school so they could go. But what you want is the kids go into this and they go, well, I want to go and play. I'll go to Twickenham on Saturday. Don't work in August because clubs don't do their juniors then. So you could shift the 100 right to the beginning of the season. So you could use it as a springboard to get kids into clubs. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that's a sound enough argument. I think you know, there's a lot of good ideas being bandied around there. What's disappointing and frustrating for me, are the ECB going to listen? Are they actually going to make any changes? I can't see where that change is coming from. I think everyone knows that it has to change. I just don't feel any confidence in the ECB actually being in a position to make those changes. Well, and that's the really sad thing for me. Well,
apparently Gary Kirsten's getting the job before there's even a job going, with Chris Silverwood moving up. That's bizarre. That whole scenario over there, it's unbelievable to me. I actually feel a little bit sorry for Chris Silverwood there, with Gary Kirsten coming out and saying a bunch of stuff, which is, you know, why are you talking? Why are you even talking about it? You know, I felt a little bit sorry about that. But to your point, who knows what's going to happen? You know, I've heard that there's possibly going to be more four-day cricket in the middle of summer, unofficially through, you know, talking to friends and stuff.
Yeah, so, should be.
Yeah. Through sources. Yeah. But I'm fascinated to know where it goes, because I get people saying that, but the middle of summer is really short, and that's the main money-making opportunity, and they don't want Ken playing.
Here's more of the question then. What about getting horses for courses or people that play in each format? I just, while we were busy chatting there, I just had a quick look at the Indian Test squad that's currently playing, and I had a look at their ODI squad. I think there is possibly about three or four transferable people that are in all of it.
It's the same as us. Yeah, it is the same. Okay. It's only New Zealand that are bloody good at
it. I wasn't sure when I asked it, but I just...
New Zealand are good at everything.
Okay.
Are they? We'll get back to that in a minute. About New Zealand being good at everything. I'm not so convincing, but we'll get back to this. But okay, that's interesting. But perhaps the point is about bowlers too. Perhaps the batting is the more difficult transferable skill, which is really interesting. Because it was a batting game 5 years ago. It was who could score most runs would win the game. And now it looks like the bowlers, and this goes right the way down to Twickenham fifth 11, I think bowlers dominate games of cricket now. And you know what? One, it ain't going to last forever. And two, it's a good thing. Because before, we were becoming like glorified baseball. And I think it's really good that bowlers are actually bouncing back. And not just your freaks like Shane Warne, but your run-of-the-mill bowlers are finding themselves able to make a contribution.
Here's a possible theory as to why it is like it is, Dan. You've just mentioned that there are 17 different competitions. Does that mean that the wickets have become less flat, as in they're more used, therefore a little bit poorer, therefore batsmen are struggling? So are we saying that maybe it's got something to do? And again, I know when you look at everything, it's going to be a combination of everything, but the wickets that some of the guys play on. I mean, I remember going to watch Middlesex play against, I can't remember what game it was. I went to Lords the one day and the wicket was just horrible. I'm thinking to myself, this is a bowler's game. This, whoever takes the most.
Oh. Yeah. Well, when the wickets are in April and October, it's not surprising that there's a little bit of moisture around. But no, I agree. I think they play more worn wickets. It's all just, you know, it's all just a result of far too much cricket, far too many competitions, not thought out well enough about where they all go. I would run the county championship alongside the 100. The 100 isn't going to go anywhere, guys. It isn't. It's what they've put all their money into, whether we like it or not. And I do like it, actually.
But who plays in that, though, Watsy? Who plays in the championship? Well, players play in both tournaments, aren't they?
Not all. There's a lot of players in the 100, mate, that don't play four-day cricket. A lot. Like, okay. if you're talking about eight teams, right? You're talking about eight teams. They keep fairly similar 11.
Name franchises. Sorry. I don't want to call them teams. Franchises. Yeah.
Okay.
Money-making vehicles.
Okay, fine. Like. Call them what you but want. You're probably talking about 100 cricketers across the eight, and they'll still be the TV games.
you know, because no one watches county championship stuff on TV anyway. So that doesn't need to be affected. But you could still be
playing. That's not on TV.
You could still be playing the games concurrently. And you'd still have, you know, if, for example, if Alistair Cook was still playing, he's not going to be out playing in the 100, is he? You know, Rory Burns was supposed to be playing in the 100. He didn't play because he's not suited to it. I think even old, what's his name? The fella that scores at one run every 300 balls, Sibley.
Oh, no.
He was supposed to be.
I'm going to say, where are you going with this? I wasn't asked.
Maybe next year, Dan. I'd love to see you in pink pyjamas. Yeah.
Easy big boy. I was going to ask you a question, Watsy, and last one on sort of the organisational stuff of all of this, because we really, you know, it's all a bit pie in the sky. But one thing that occurs to me, and the reason I want to ask you, Watsy, you're an NFL fan, the divisional structure of American football is quite interesting, right, for a British sports fan, isn't it? Because it's so very different. Now, is there a case that you could keep all the counties, as Don has said, but you could create this divisional structure where you don't have to play everybody all the time? Now, you and I obviously know that teams in each division do play each other twice, but you don't play everybody twice. It's not, there's none of that logic, and it changes each year as to who you play based on performances in previous years and stuff. But is there a case for a sort of divisional structure where there are however many games you need in the calendar, whether it's only 8, whether it's 10, as Don has said? I mean, it'd be a radical change, but it would be a radical change within the confines of what I think many counties would find acceptable. Or am I just too many glasses of wine?
No, absolutely not. You know, I think anything that brings in less quantity and more quality is the way forward. I think as a first start, if you have to embed the counties, like, I can't see how we won't, unless there's a radical change that everything changes. Then I agree. I think maybe even four divisions, like you say, and then almost a playoff structure at the end of it. You know, you could do that regionally. That could work quite well. I'm more in favour of almost. I'll get destroyed, but almost merging counties and having less teams of higher quality, and actually matches that people might actually be interested in watching on TV, because you've got so some really high quality cricketers playing against each other. The problem with 18 teams, even if you split them into 3 divisions, we're still going to have 70 mile per hour dobbers with their massive seam up Duke's ball taking 8 wickets in a game because they're completely unplayable bowling just on a length. And that doesn't do anyone any good when you get to the top level of the game. So
yeah, I follow that. But it's preferable. Very much like the idea.
It is preferable.
Yeah, of having 4 or 5 of those games, 4 or 5 group games, and then you qualify for the postseason.
Yeah.
And then you have 2 or 3 to work out who the champion county is. And there has to be a financial structure in place to make sure that counties benefit from the other forms of the game and not just from getting 300 people in to watch, you know, to watch Gloucester play.
So you want 8 franchises in the new format game, Dan? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think you can have I think you can have all of the counties, but I think you should have fewer games.
Yeah,
that's the only way they survive. And sometimes you have to put it in those terms, but they have a veto on all of this. So I think, you know, as and when Watsy and I run English cricket, we'll just do it. But we don't yet. So I guess we'll have to wait and see where it goes. There's other cricket on though, Yush. And we could go on for hours, obviously, about the trials and tribulations of English cricket. But SA have been playing, right? And you've sort of been doing okay, at least up to this point in time, day one of...
I'm not changing my prediction that I did a couple of weeks ago when I said South Africa were going to lose 3-0. Because I'm just sticking with it and hoping to hell that we win 2-1. But I can't see it with the talent that India have at the moment, even in South African conditions. But yeah, first test was okay. Guys did okay. Usual story happens, big collapse, unfortunately. This test, the second test, looks much better, if I'm honest. You know, bowling out India for 200 and then getting to 35 for 1 overnight on an interesting Wanderers wicket, which is not the normal, considering that was the game that was the big 4-3-8 and then, you know, AB de Villiers almost scoring 150 in the pink game. And, you know, this is normally supposed to be the sort of highway road where the wicket there looks, you know, it looks very interesting. There was a couple that took off, a couple that rolled, for those of you that were watching. And I think it is going to turn come day 4s and 5s. So it is a proper test wicket, in my opinion, which means that 200 plays, I don't know, 150. I know that you said maybe 150 is a good total for South Africa in the second day, Dan, but I'm hoping there's a bit more. Look, hopefully when we move to Cape Town for the third and final test against the Indians, that you know, we're one all with a shot in possibly winning it. But you know,
I watched a bit of it this morning, I think it was, and proper game,
yeah.
Proper test match. You got to work for your runs. The bowlers, I think the bowling's quite strong, but at the same time, you got to work for it. And I think it's much more engaging than 600 v 500. I'll be honest.
I've enjoyed it, and yeah, it's good to see the talent coming through. You know, Janssen, that new guy, him coming through. He looks like a good prospect. You know, I think Nigel said, "Hang on, how did the English not get first pick of him?" He looks like a good prospect at the age of 21. And then, yeah, obviously the rest of the bowlers just look fantastic. I've always said I think it's our batting that's frail. And with the surprise announcement of Quinton de Kock retiring from Test cricket, you know, that sort of came out of nowhere, as even Dean Elder, the South African captain, said today. So, yeah, it looks surprising. But at the same time, you know, it gives other people the opportunity. You know, new kid Kyle Vereeniging's come in. He looks very good with the gloves. Better than Butler, just throwing that out there. But yeah, there was that one catch off punt today which went both ways, and I thought that was a fantastic catch. Like, you know, it was one of those where you're thinking to yourself, that's a, you know, most people would say it's regulation. I would have put that down, not that I'm a keeper, but yeah.
So what's happening with de Kock?
Where's he going so next? He's focusing on ODI cricket or white ball cricket, so he's focusing on that. I wouldn't be surprised if during... because he's focusing on his family, right? So that's the whole reason for him for doing it. So I would not be surprised if he's not picked up by counties to come and play some four-day cricket over here. And then, you know, focus on the white ball cricket and only play when South Africa wants him to play in the ODIs and the T20s effectively. So, you know, maybe if he gets a contract at Middlesex or Surrey, somewhere where it's flat, obviously, otherwise. Because, yeah, look, he's got an okay technique, good keeper. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't come over and play over here in the longer format. But, you know, what his retirement thing was, focus on family and play white ball cricket. That's it.
Interesting. What's he, Donald, have you seen any of this game or of the Bangladesh-New Zealand game at all? I mean, I appreciate there's more than enough going on in all of our lives. You can't sort of binge on every test match going. But have you caught any of this?
I've not seen any of the South Africa stuff. I've kept abreast of what's happening between New Zealand and Bangladesh. That seems to be settling up nicely for a decent game, I think.
Well, what do you make of that, Donners? Yeah. I mean, the narrative around New Zealand is they're the greatest team that have ever played the game, right? Apparently. This is the story, the official line. Everyone loves New Zealand. Well, Bangladesh ain't standing there and admiring, are they? They're looking pretty strong at the moment.
Yeah, it's... Interesting one. What's going to happen in this test match?
Yeah, I mean, I think if I'm right in saying Williamson's not playing, is he? And I wonder if that's just made a bit of a difference. Is that right?
Williamson's not playing. I think he's injured, right? I think that's the official line. You know, farewell to Ross Taylor, who's retiring after the series. Yeah, I was quite surprised. The Bangladeshi players have just rocked up and, started playing reasonably well. I've heard that there's been a couple of drop catches, which could have swayed things here and there. But, you know, that's cricket, I guess. So, yeah, I mean...
I don't know about proclaiming that New Zealand are the greatest team that ever lived. I think what makes them so good is that they're perennial underdogs and they beat the bigger cricketing nations. I think
I'm glad somebody's risen to that obvious sort of fishing line that I threw out there. What? So I was a bit disappointed for a second, but
I think when you lose one of the top three batsmen in the world and your skipper in Kane Williamson, and you play, you're on a bit of a hide into nothing. Against a team like Bangladesh, you can, on their day, perform against anyone, as we've seen, you know, time and time again. That's not where New Zealand want to be. They like having all the pressure on the opposition. It doesn't surprise me. Every now and then there's a funny result with them like that. But I'll tell you what, next time they play against us or Australia or India, they'll be bang on their A game.
Yeah, at the same time, though, I find that interesting because they're seen as a very... I mean, I think that's a fair comment, first up. But the Sims are a very professional outfit who don't miss anything. And yet, against Bangladesh at home, they seem to be struggling a bit. One thing I would say I do like a lot about the Bangladeshi innings, and I did see just catch a little bit of this before, is that I have this impression that Bangladesh want to whack the ball. they go out and they play some crazy shots in white ball cricket, and you see the ball flying off to third man, and they get caught down there and whatnot. Well, I couldn't help but notice their opener, Joy, which is a great name, but I thought, for starters, 78 runs, 228 balls. You know, it's Tavare-esque almost. He's taking his time. And number four, Momenal, 88 runs, 244 balls. So I like the way that they're thinking, right, this is a different game. And I don't know anything about those two batsmen, but it just strikes me as they're digging in. They're chasing 300. We're going to bat a long time. We've got, you know, we want to get 600 here so that we've got a fair amount of time to try and bowl New Zealand out without batting again. And I'm thinking, I have Bangladesh down as a white ball country, quite frankly. Mm. And it's only 2 days. I mean, New Zealand are a very strong side. They may still win this test match. But I just like the mood music, that they're taking their time, they're digging in, and respect due to them for that. And I've got to say that, given the way I've played the game for the last 35 years. But it struck me as, you know, a fair play moment. As you say, Watsy, write New Zealand off, you'd be a nutcase. But quite nice to see Bangladesh being really competitive, to be honest.
Yeah, totally agree. It's yeah. Wicket looks very different to the one that the New Zealanders normally prepare too. Because normally you can't tell the difference between the wicket and... Now, this looked like a proper wicket, which was interesting.
Yeah, it does look like a different world. Yeah, that's true. Enough of such things. We'll see how that one pans out. And I fully expect New Zealand to go and win. I was big Bangladesh up there. The fixtures for the Middlesex County Cricket League came out just a few days ago. The County League is going to try and publish them on the 1st of January every year, which seems quite nice to me. It gives you 5 months to get yourself ready to roll. Now, our ones will be starting with a nice straightforward game against Teddington in Bushy Park. You know, why not get that one up and running early doors? The twos will be welcome in North London. Three's got a potential tough one there. Highgate at home. Highgate always done quite well in that league and just missed out on promotion last year. Fours. I'm trying to think where the fours are. I'm struggling a bit there off the top of my head. I know the fifths are playing Actonians fours. I think the fours are playing Hornsey threes, actually. So the fixtures are all out there. They're on our website. People can look them up. But it made me think about pre-season, folks. Now, pre-season's a funny old thing. We've got basically a month worth of games, and they're not quite here yet, but they won't be too long. And people tend to approach them in quite different ways. And I'm just going to throw it open. Huge pre-season, what are you thinking? Are you thinking play as much cricket as possible? It doesn't really matter what happens. I just want to get bat on ball. Or are you thinking, no, I want a big score. Or I want one decent spell with the ball. What are you going into pre-season?
Play as much
thinking?
Cricket as possible so that my body is sort of prepared for come the first week of May. So that, yeah, I don't...
You need to prepare for the outside of the actual game part of it, mate. You know?
No, no.
The socialising afterwards is the challenge.
For me, it's just bat on ball. I just want to play as much as I can, try and get some sort of form, feel it, see if I remember how to hit the ball, see if I remember how to turn the arm over, all of that sort of stuff. So for me, I mean, you know, come pre-season nets, I'll be there. Come the first game, I'll put my hand up and, you know, if selected, I'll play in them. So, yeah, I like as much pre-season as possible.
Seems fair enough. And what's your approach? Are you the same, or are you looking to pick specific games, or no approach whatsoever? Just take what comes.
No, I think I like to get a couple in pre-season. Hopefully get a nice 35 or 40 over game, so to ease yourself in. Weirdly, I've always scored most of my runs in the pre-season, but I think I'm. It's no secret I don't like batting in the nets. Really, I don't. It doesn't simulate much. Match to me, where you get six bowlers all bowling different styles, bowling one after the other. Whereas I've always thought of pre-season as like your ultimate net. And the great thing is the bowlers aren't tuned up, so you usually get a little bit more width than normal. No, it's true.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's just definitely been part of my pre-season success. But yeah, and, you know, it's important to hit a few, you know, to get that love for the game back, especially as you're getting older. I know most of us don't suffer with that, but the first time you cream one through the covers for four, you know, I remember why I'm out here now, and it sort of gets you going and ready for the season. I enjoy playing one or two. I wouldn't want to play like four games in the freezing snow or whatever, but no, I think it's a good way to get tuned up. I think it feels quite long, but fielding in those early games. But again, you have to get yourself back used to that.
That happens to all of us, Watsy. It gets longer and longer the older you get.
But no.
And I think, you know, to be fair, we were talking before we started recording this pod that the last pre-season game of 2021, so last year, was on the green. And you scored a pretty blistering 86, was it?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
I remember that. The ball was flying into the trees. So I mean, that you know, can't help but set you up quite nicely. I mean, admittedly, you know, I know that you didn't play as much cricket as you wanted to in 2021, but that was a good way to get the confidence up, yeah?
No, it was. And to be honest, if I hadn't had... Well, I had two good knocks last year. If I hadn't had those, you know, after the year, the summer I had, I probably would have been looking at this summer very differently to how I am, which is now I'm itching to get back to it this year, you know, because that's what's still fresh in my memory. So it can be quite important. It can be quite important, I think. And, you know, the last thing you want as a bat as well is to go out and get two low scores in pre-season and feel under pressure from ball one of the league season. So it's just about getting 20 or 30 on the board early and feeling good about your game again.
Donis, how about you? Have you played much pre-season traditionally? You have, haven't you? I always remember you playing whenever you could, really.
Yeah, I try to. I mean, I think probably similar to all of us, obviously, we're all getting older, so I need to get in the nets pre-season just to get moving. I totally get what Watsy says, that it's not, you know, it's not necessarily match practice, but I need to get in the nets just to get moving again. Get some time out in the middle. Try and get at least one pass mid off before the league season starts. Doesn't always happen, but
I'm going to say I lower that barrier.
Yeah. You know. I mean, you know, what's you saying there about creaming one through the covers? Usually by about July or August, I may have squeezed one through. So that's a good season for me. But no, I'd like to get in the nets. Like to get a few games in pre-season. What I do struggle with, and this won't come as a surprise to any of you guys, a bit like you, Disco, I prefer the ball coming on. So you get used to playing 3 months indoors and the ball, yes, it comes on a bit. You go outdoors in April, you know, wait, and then you spoon one up to cover. So that's always a bit of a challenge. But, yeah, got to get time out in the middle and see what happens. Just on the pre-season scores and what's he talking about getting a big score last year, I think conversely, 3 or 4 years ago, I don't think I scored a run in pre-season and then had probably my best season ever during the league. It was the year that Jonty and I put on, I don't know, I think we had 8 or 9 50 opening partnerships in 12 or 13 games. And it's just...
Did you, Donners? I don't remember that. I don't remember you saying anything about that.
No. Yeah, I wasn't aware of that either.
I'll remind you down the club this year, Watsy. Come on, Dan.
But it's a fair comment. And I think your point about indoor nets is well made. I've never been a great lover of pre-season. It's not stopped me playing lots of pre-season cricket. But one big plus was realising that I'm not batting on concrete. And it's not about, you know, sort of actually not being aware. Clearly, I am aware. But the body has got used over the winter, if you've had 10, 12 indoor nets, to playing on fast wickets. And that ain't happening at the end of April. So it was often really good to get that horror show out the way then, in the hope that, you know, it may get a little bit easier come May. And I'd rather have that experience in April than in league cricket in May. I also think some of the games that we've had in pre-season, and there's some games that are always absolutely goddamn freezing, acting away. The first 11, you know, the traditional freezer fixture, you know, you're turning up, you're playing in gloves. And one game I remember, we were chasing 200 and me and JP Cornier owned the batting and we were batting and the teams just looked at each other and gave up and we were 100 for none because it was so cold. And I've never played in a game where people just said, this is just too ridiculous. We're going off because it's too freezing. Of course, it was a pre-season game, so it didn't matter. But yeah, I mean, sometimes I've played in some horrible conditions in pre-season and... Yeah, I do. It does make me think that, you know, really we should be playing our cricket in June and July because, you know, because it doesn't feel ideal. Having said all that, there is a case that, well, some leagues around the country, rather, when they have 22 league games, they go straight into this. And not everybody even has a pre-season. Mm. And I know we do in Middlesex, we do in Surrey. In Oxfordshire, Steve, when you were playing back in the Shire, did you have pre-seasons then or were you a 22-game county?
No, we were 18. We'd have one or two pre-seasons, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. We didn't in Shropshire, really. It was 22 games, and you just have all of those problems in week one. And of course, at the end of September as well, because the season would go on a bit longer. Cool. Now, in terms of pre-season fixtures, huge, we do have one slight dilemma, don't we? I don't know if you picked up on this. The Twos will start against North London, and we're supposed to play them
exactly.
in a pre-season friendly, aren't we?
It's going to be interesting, yeah. So Ones and Twos are playing against North London's Ones and Twos in the pre-season, and we're playing in our first game at home. The Twos are playing North London, so yeah, that's always a good one to weigh each other up in the pre-season, and then I suppose see each other again. I actually don't know if North London are coming to us or the Twos, that is, or are coming to us, or if we're going to them. But yeah, it is what it is, right? And you just sort of I suppose you'll weigh each other up and then see how the first game goes in the league.
I mean, I think I hope we're still playing that fixture. I wouldn't want anyone to think, "Oh my goodness, we mustn't play them because we're going to play them in week one." We haven't played them for years, you know, just because the Twos have not been in the same division. So I really think there's not a problem there at all. And I guess you'd see it the same way, right?
I don't see any issues with it. It's the same as if we were, you know, playing against in the same league as Acton. You know, we're playing Acton in our preseason, so why not? You know, why change that? We've been doing it for the past 100 years. It feels like. But yeah, we'll carry on.
Yeah, the old freezer fixture. We can't ditch the freezer fixture. I mean, yeah. We've got to do that. It's just such a, you know, an institution in this club. We've definitely played it for the 20 plus years that I've been here. And Englefield Green, Don, I was going to say, almost the traditional season opening fixture. Me and you have played in that enough times.
No, we've had some mixed weather for that game. We have had a couple of nice days. I mean, you can get nice days in April. You know, it can be quite sunny, but we've also had a couple of really cold days over there. But always a good start to the season.
Absolutely, absolutely. Speaking more broadly, Cricket in Hopes of 2022, folks, its first pod of the year. I might as well ask that. I was going to just throw it up there. I'll set the ball rolling. I'm not going to play as much as I would have done in my youth for obvious reasons. Challenge, you know, sort of more challenges at home and stuff. But I'm hoping to play 10 games, and I really wouldn't mind playing at least one game where I feel that I don't have to think about the shots that I play. You know what I mean? Where you feel that it's just coming naturally. It's just in a
just group. Leave everything.
Not very often.
Just leave everything.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that would be perfection, Watson. Nothing's ever going to get that good. But what I mean is that, you know, when you don't play as much, you sort of lose the ability to have faith in yourself in a way, because you sort of know you're going to have bad days, but the good days will be there too. So I just like to play in innings where it just all feels like you don't have to think about it. And, you know, even if it's only a 30 or a 40 as opposed to anything higher. So that's the aim, to try and play one innings that's just so smooth you don't have to think about it. You know, whether that'll happen, goodness only knows. How about you?
Ones win the Prem, twos get promoted, threes get promoted, fours get promoted, fives get promoted. That's my hope.
Nice and consistent then, I like that.
Yeah.
Are you prepared to accept the promotions in second place?
Yes, most definitely. Yeah.
That's very liberal of you. Grace, on a personal level?
Score a few runs here and there, take a few wickets. So, yeah. Just keen to see the club do well this year, that's all.
As spoken like a true chairman, and I obviously buy into that as a secretary. You know, it's amazing how much joy you get from watching other people do well in it. In all seriousness, you know, it's good stuff. Watsy, where do you stand with all of this?
I just can't wait to play a game again, Dan. Really, you know, without being over dramatic, I wondered at some point if I'd play in the next couple of years. At one point, I just couldn't see a way out. The first time I'm out there and holding a bat in my hand, it will just be brilliant. I hope I can play a couple of knocks that swing a game for whichever team I'm playing in, whether it be threes, fours, fives or sevenths. I hope
it is nice to play a decisive innings, isn't it? That's a very fair point.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Even if it's only 20 not out, the innings
17 not out against Highgate to stop them winning off of about a million balls, that's fine.
Your former club, of course, as well. Yeah, it makes a difference.
Yeah, it's lovely. I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to landing a few like Warney and reinventing myself as a top-notch leg spinner and having Carlos pestering me.
He's now journeyed off into the world of fantasy. Okay, well, that's all right.
And I'm looking forward to hopefully the threes not having a travelling circus around North London.
I was going to get to that in a moment. Let me come back to that. Donna, how about you?
I think it's really looking forward to getting back out there. Hopefully, you know, the last couple of years have been quite tough for everybody, sort of truncated seasons and stuff. So hopefully as normal a season as possible, you know, get some runs, maybe turn my arm over a little bit, hold a few catches. I dropped everything last year. And, you know, if I can get one through extra cover before July, happy days.
I should say as well, there is a cricketer in Worcestershire, Luke Davis, who is the only cricketer in the world, I think I'm right in saying Donners, who is absolutely petrified of Donners' off spin, right? And I don't mean he's not a great fan. I mean, he is petrified because 2 years running in Cricket Week, I brought Donners on the last over before lunch, as of course you can do in Cricket Week because there is a lunch. And I said, Luke can bat, right? But he don't want it above his eye line. And of course, Donners puts it like six miles above his eye line. And Luke sort of, I can't really describe what he did. He shuffled down a wicket, obviously missed it, and was out 2 years running. And he still talks about it now, Donners.
Good. Is he coming back this year?
Well, if he is, he's going to physically refuse to face you.
Fantastic.
It's that bad.
I mean, I like that, you know, obviously, it would be nice to stay injury free. So that's, obviously, we are talking fantasy cricket again, but.
All good. So you mentioned about third team travelling circus next year. Well, there's a rumour going round. It may be a malicious rumour, but I don't think it is. And there's a rumour about someone who's keen to take on the third 11 captaincy. Conor Finney's done a great job over the last couple of years in testing times, but the rumour is that we have a Lancastrian keen on the job, Mr. Geoffrey Stothart, which I guess might be decent news for the threes, Watsy, if that comes to pass, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, Jeff, if you get him playing and get him focused in the right direction, there's not many people in the club that have forgotten more about cricket than he knows. I've got to say, he was an amazing help for me the year that he joined and we won the league. You know, the way that he's many mystical arts with the ball, but also tactically. I think it'll be a really, really, really great appointment if we can keep him up for the job.
I can see Watts, he's lording him, you know, before the season. Then Watts, fine leg. Next over, fine leg again.
100%. 100%, yeah.
And it'd be me, third man to third man, the other end. Yeah. But yeah, no, Jeff is pretty keen. Obviously, nothing is decided till the AGM, but he's keen. He won't play every week, but I think we're talking 12, 13, 14 games. And I think that would be good for the club. And the threes are going to be playing at Broome Road with the fours this year and the fives, hopefully, at Barn Elms. Harmeet's working on that, and we're working on filling in any blank spaces over the next few days, weeks. Days and weeks, no longer than that. So yeah, I think potentially an exciting appointment. Cool, guys. Anything else you want to fling in?
Can we start playing cricket now already? I think everyone's chomping at the bit now. Yeah, when do we start? I mean, yeah.
Well, the weather's, I mean, it has been a bit wet, I'll say that, but temperature wise, yeah. I've played in much colder weather than we've had over the last week.
Yeah, obviously, happy new year to everyone. Hopefully, we see everyone down at the club and, looking forward to a successful season with everyone.
And hopefully you should have got an email as well from me. I know these things are really dull, but the AGM is, I think it's the 8th of February. So your emails for all the details. Do come along. Do get involved. Even if Omicron's still with us, we will be having an AGM on that date. So I always think AGMs are important sort of milestones in the cricketing winter to get us somewhere nearer to the new season. Cool. Guys, as always, it's been a pleasure. When are we going to reconvene you? Are we going to do this after the fourth test, or is that just going to be a step too far? What do you think? I guess if England win, we can have a podcast then, right?
Yeah, but that's, you know, looking at the weather, I think England might get a draw, which, you know, might be also a celebration. So it looks very wet for the next test. So it does look like it's not going to be a 5-0 whitewash. Might be a 4-0 with the weather that's forecast for the fourth test.
I was going to say, if you want another podcast at the end of the fourth test, that'll be what, on Thursday of this week, I guess?
Well, that's a very, very valid point, Andrew. Yes.
Maybe leave it to the fifth test, because that'll be another couple of days after that. So,
Fair call. We will reconvene as and when we can and need to. I think that's the way to put it, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Thanks for your insights, guys. As ever, brilliant stuff. And I'll speak to you all in a bit.
Thanks, everyone. Cheers.
Bye.